Good morning, everybody. There's a woman named Kelly Sado who was an instructor for an organization that helped disabled adults. And she told a story online, and I'd like to share it with you. She says, I was responsible for taking a group of 3 to 4 adults at a time out in public for various activities. We would go to the library, compare prices at stores, and participate in sporting events through Special Olympics. One time, we were at a local Burger King. My group of adults, all men at the time, got in line with me, and I assisted the ones who needed help ordering off the menu. A tall man with his 2 small children stood behind us. Growing increasingly frustrated at the length of time it took for my group to order. As my group and I walked away, I heard him say to the cashier, I bet it angers you. That's not actually the way he said it, but I'm cleaning it up for church. Getting a bunch of slow retards in here. I bit my tongue and sat down with my guys waiting for our food. As we ate our lunch, the same man sat in disgust across the room, eyeing us every few moments. He eventually had the audacity to approach our table and say, you know, I bring my kids in here for a nice, fun lunch, and first I have to wait for all 5 of you to make a simple order, and then I have to watch them eat like this. And he motioned to Michael, a 40-something with Down syndrome. People with Down syndrome are some of the most lively, compassionate people I've ever met. But characteristically, they have a large, protruding tongue, which affects the way that they eat. Even I had to get used to it at first. The man looked at me and continued, can't you just take your retards out of here and go outside? What was the problem there? The problem is they were different. Many societies tend to reject and isolate those who are different in some way. The ones who are different become outcasts. They are excluded from normal interactions. They're not accepted in doing the normal everyday things that everyone else does. As outcasts, they may be thought of as less than human, as failures, or as threats even to society. And many horrible things have been done to outcasts over the history of humanity because they were different. Even today, some outcasts have been driven out even from their own families. Others are shunned and excluded from all the kinds of things that happen, celebrations and interactions. We're doing a series of messages called Field Guide to Love. And we're trying to turn on the light and remind ourselves, really, what does the Bible say about who we're called to love? And what does that really look like? And how can we take beginning steps to doing it? And today, I'd like to talk to you about loving the outcasts. And so we'll start in the Gospel of Mark, a story from the life of Jesus. Mark chapter 1, verse 40. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus was indignant. He reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said. Be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him, and he was cleansed. Now, at the time of Jesus, leprosy was considered highly contagious, although technically leprosy isn't. And so lepers had to live apart from everyone, other than other lepers. They weren't allowed to live in the town with everybody else. They had to live in camps outside of town. They had to wear special clothing so that they could be spotted more easily. They were excluded from the town, from the temple, and from the synagogue. So they weren't allowed to go in any places where people gathered or where they were worship God. They were excluded, in a sense, from God, and no one would touch them. The fear was that if you touched them, you might get what they had. You might become sick. And this poor man who comes to Jesus is so locked into this state that even though he's very confident in the power of Jesus to cleanse him, he's not sure that Jesus would be willing to help. But Jesus, of course, was more than willing. In fact, he was indignant, it says, that his willingness could even be doubted. And he reached out his hand and touched the man. He did what nobody else would do. He touched him. And immediately, the leprosy left him. You know, Jesus made a point of finding various ways to touch and to reach out to all manner of outcasts. In the Gospel of Luke, we read another story about Jesus helping a different kind of outcast. It's found in Luke chapter 19, verse 1. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through, and a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." And so he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." You see, Zacchaeus was a tax collector. That meant he's collecting taxes for the occupying Roman power. So he's sort of a traitor to his country. He's working for the other side. And not only that, the way that the Romans collected taxes is that they required a certain amount from the tax collector, and then the tax collector's pay was whatever he could get over the top of that. So tax collectors normally jacked everybody's taxes way up, tried to get everything they could, and that was viewed as cheating. They were like considered as thieves. So the tax collectors were outcasts. They weren't allowed into the synagogue. Most people who were serious about their religion wouldn't go into their house, just like they wouldn't go into the house of a Gentile. Everyone considered Zacchaeus as a person to avoid and a person who should be punished. But Jesus stops under the tree, calls him by name, and honors him by inviting himself to his house. Everybody else was focused on the bad choices that Zacchaeus had made in his life. But Jesus saw that he was actually the same. He says, "This man too is a son of Abraham." He didn't just see the bad choices. He saw something else. Now, these stories about Jesus, and there are others, are told to us because they tell us something about the heart of God and about how God would have us approach those who are outcasts, those who are different. A gospel that's not good news for the outcasts is not true gospel. So who might be today's outcasts? Well, we have, as it were, the physical lepers. That might be those who are disabled, those whom the world considers unattractive, maybe those with certain kinds of illnesses that we're concerned about. At one point in time, certainly people with AIDS were treated this way as outcasts. Number two, we might have the psychological lepers. That's those with people with mental illnesses or mental disabilities, or maybe sometimes addicts might fall into that category. And just taking into consideration those who are disabled in some way, these first two categories, either physically or mentally disabled, according to the U.S. Census, there are over 50 million people in the U.S. that deal with some kind of disability. Two-thirds of these people report that they are treated differently in the negative way because of their disability. So it's the norm that they are mistreated. And in fact, they're 50% more likely than other people to be victims of violent crime. That is the way it actually works in our society. Then number three, we have what might be called the moral lepers. People who are outcasts and who are shunned because of perhaps their moral background. That might include prisoners, convicted felons, prostitutes, maybe people whose sexuality or approach to gender is different than everyone else. Probably at the top of this list would be people who are pedophiles. Now, don't misunderstand, I'm totally committed to safety for children first, but I think even then, Jesus would see those people as people who are sons of Adam and people for whom Jesus died. And then we have the religious lepers. This category might include all those whose religion seems out on the fringe or those whose religion is considered a threat. For example, in former generations, many persecuted Jews because they considered them a threat. In fact, some still do. Today, it's more likely to be somebody who's got kind of an esoteric, you know, New Agey kind of belief, or more frequently, Muslims. In Jesus' time, the religious lepers were the Samaritans and the Gentiles. The Samaritans were people who didn't believe exactly the way the Jews did, and they lived in this place called Samaria, which is why they were called Samaritans. And many Jews wouldn't even walk through the town. And, of course, there's another story where Jesus goes through there and he talks to a woman there. And as it turns out, she's a kind of a double leper because she has a checkered moral history. And yet Jesus treats her with respect and love. And then finally we have in our society economic lepers. And in particular, I'm thinking of the homeless or the very poor, the people who can't disguise their poverty. And a lot of times people want to avoid them. So how exactly was Jesus treating the outcasts? Well, from looking at these stories, we can see several things. One, first, he went to them or he touched them. Jesus seemed to go out of his way to connect with the people who were outcasts. He made a point of talking to that woman in Samaria. He accepted the prostitutes and the tax collectors who came to hear him. There was really nothing passive, actually, about the way that Jesus treated the outcasts. He didn't just kind of see them on the fringe and kind of be passive about it. He actually would try to go to them and bring them in and include them, like he did with Zacchaeus. He stops there and doesn't just walk by, doesn't just like go by and maybe wave to him, "Hi, Zacchaeus, have a good day." No, he wants to take it a step further and says, "I'm coming to your house to eat. Out of everybody in town, I'm going to your place." So he takes this intentional approach. He treats them with respect. You know, the interesting thing with Jesus is that there's never, with him, any hint of mockery or stereotyping as he approaches these people. You know, there's no, all Samaritans are, fill in the blank. And there's none of that in him. He seems to see each person as simply a valuable whole person, and he treats them with respect. He, number three, saw them apart from their differences. He focuses on sort of the person underneath, the real person, the fact that this person is a human created by God and loved by God, regardless of how they came to be an outcast. And number four, at the same time, he related to them in love without endorsement. You know, Jesus seemed to understand that relationship did not have to mean endorsement or approval of all their behavior. So he goes to Zacchaeus' house, but that doesn't mean he's saying, "Now we should all become tax collectors," you know, or that's necessarily the best choice to make in life. He's not saying that. Same way, he lets the prostitute come and wash his feet with her hair. He's not endorsing prostitution. He's just simply loving her, not her choices. You know, he could go to, you know, the tax collectors without saying, you know, cooperation with Romans is good. And that's where some of us get tripped up, especially with the moral lepers or the religious lepers, because we don't approve of what they've done or what they are doing. And it's just far too easy to let that keep us from relationship. Like, I don't want them in my house. I don't want to, like, be around them. That kind of thing. It's almost like the way most people responded to the lepers. They didn't want to touch the lepers for fear they would catch it. And a lot of times, the way that we react, particularly to the moral or the religious lovers, is we don't want to be around them because we might catch it. What they're doing might rub off on us. The funny thing is, Jesus is never afraid of catching it. He's never afraid of it rubbing off on him. Because you know what? When Jesus touches you, he's not the one that's going to get changed. When Jesus touches you, you're the one that's going to get changed. When Jesus touches you, he's not going to become a leper. No, you're going to stop being a leper. You're going to get cleansed. And so that's kind of how it is with the love of Jesus. It's more powerful than whatever is out there that's not good. You know, we don't need to be afraid of loving people, even when they're like maybe not doing the best things. We don't need to be afraid of love. Because love is stronger. You know, I think the way that Jesus treated the outcasts is, of course, one of the most outrageous things reported in the Gospels. It's sort of like, it just wasn't the way most rabbis did things. It is also one of the most attractive things reported in the Gospel, the way that Jesus treated the outcasts. Because religious people, they found it outrageous, but I think everybody else loved it. Now, we are called to do the same. Matthew 10:8, this is instructions to the apostles, but he later expands it to all disciples. He says, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you've received, freely give. Those are all commands. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy. And, you know, somehow I think that cleanse those who have leprosy is meant to convey a little bit more than just physical healing. Otherwise, why repeat yourself? Because he already said, heal the sick. That would have been enough. There's some sense that he wants us to stretch out to the outcast and draw them out of where they are. Cleansing in other ways. Social, moral, emotional cleansing maybe is also in view. Or if that's not enough for you, take Matthew 7:12, where Jesus says, so in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. The golden rule is still very applicable. And if that's not enough for you, how about 1 Corinthians 11:1, where the Apostle Paul says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. We're meant to be following the example of Jesus. So the way that Jesus treated the outcasts, that's how we should be treating the outcasts. And when I read the stories about Jesus, I want to be like him. Don't you want to be like Jesus? That's our destiny. That's what God's trying to do in us, is to make us more like Jesus. And loving the outcasts is a necessary part of learning how to be like Jesus. Now, there are ways that we ostracize the outcasts, some more obvious, some less obvious, perhaps without thinking, perhaps just because that's kind of our natural reaction. You know, one way we ostracize outcasts is like when we see somebody who's different, to have kind of this curiosity and repulsion thing going, where we stare at them, but we don't talk to them. You know, you want to keep looking at them, but you're on the other side of the room, you know. It's a very common reaction. Children will do the same thing, although children are usually more bold. They might go right up to them and talk to them about it, you know. But that's one way that, you know, the way that we look at people is even different. Obviously, the second way we ostracize outcasts is by exclusion. You know, like the guy at the story I told at the beginning, like, you shouldn't, like, bring them into the Burger King here because that messed up my lunch by 5 minutes. You know, so often, however, the outcasts are not invited. They're not invited to the wedding. They're not invited to the birthday party. They're not invited to be on the team. They're not invited to go to the dance or whatever it might be. Now, it's true. You could argue someone who's a genuine threat, say a pedophile, has to be kept away from potential victims. Okay, fine. But most of our outcasts aren't threats. Most, you know, say our disabled people, they're not threats. Exclusion can be an angry response, but it might just be a passive kind of thing. It's not so much what is done as what is not done. It's that extra effort that's just not made, and so exclusion happens. You know, you think, they're in a wheelchair. I don't know if they can get up the steps. We just won't invite them. That kind of thing. Sometimes this exclusion extends to the families dealing with a disabled family member. One mother in our church with a disabled child put it this way. She says, families with small children affected by disabilities are often excluded from the normal give and take of traded play dates, neighborhood playgroups, and even local schools. This creates isolation not only for the children, but even more so for the parents, especially the mothers, who could very much use a local support team. The entire family is affected by the needs of the disabled child. Parents are often not as available to support the interests of the well sibling. That includes involvement in schools and scouts and sports, might even extend to Sunday school and youth group. And parents are surely less able to meet their own needs, partly because normal babysitting options are virtually non-existent. So a lot of times, just by, not easing the way, not making the extra effort, we end up excluding those. Sometimes people who are different are excluded, are mistreated by categorizing or name-calling, like in the example at the front, calling these disabled adults retards. Just using name-calling or assumptions is a way of doing that. Or number four, by focusing solely on their difference. If someone's difference is very visible or is clearly known, it's easy to get focused on only that one thing and forget the rest of who that person is. To forget, there's other things. That's not the only thing in their life. That's not the only thing that's true about them. We can sometimes, see the difference so much that we don't notice what they think, what they feel, what their other needs might be, or what they can contribute. One disabled person I know doesn't like to come up for prayer after church on Sundays because every time everybody wants to pray for his disability. And not pray for whatever he might actually come up for. He comes up to get prayer for something else, but they won't pray about the thing he come up for. They want to pray about the disability because they're so focused on it as if that's the only thing in his life. So, some steps to loving the outcasts. Number one, give courtesy and be patient. Give courtesy and be patient. That seems like obvious. But you know what? We don't live in a very courteous society anymore. So, we have to work at it. Number two, give respect. It's important to show respect to the outcasts. In fact, my hope is to show respect to all human beings because we're all made in the image of God. Somebody comes in here and I remember a guy, an older gentleman came in. He says, I'm a homosexual and I want to know how I'm going to get treated here. Well, I hope we treat you with love and respect. Because regardless of what you've done in your past, what you regret, what your orientation is, you're made in the image of God. And we want to love you and respect you. He liked that. An important part of respect, of course, is to recognize the accomplishments and abilities of the outcasts. Did you know that one hearing-impaired young man who, unable to talk verbally, had to use sign language, who grew up in our church, was a champion debater in high school? And a lot of people would have told him, you can't go out for the debate team. But they would have been wrong. He could go out for the debate team. He did go out for the debate team, and he was a champion. Okay? That disabled person might be able to do far more than you think. That moral outcast might have some real love and compassion, more than you think. So learn to see the whole person and treat each one with respect. Number three, ask instead of assuming. Sometimes I think we jump in too quick, about what kind of help is needed. Perhaps we should learn to ask before doing it. Otherwise, your help could end up being more demeaning than uplifting. Consider conversations with people who are outcasts as an adventure. Let that person have some say over where it goes. It might be interesting. You might hear some fun, interesting things. Number four, invite and include. It's important to do this as much as possible. You know, inclusion's a powerful force for healing and change, and we can use it for the glory of God, just like Jesus did with Zacchaeus. So, you know somebody who's kind of on the fringes. They're kind of maybe an outcast. You know, people don't like want to be around them because they're different. Well, be like Jesus. Go out of your way to invite and include them. And lastly, number five, be a learner. Learn more about their life. Learn more about their interests. Learn about their challenges. Learn about their gifts. Being a learner is a great way to love people. And you know, it's very rare that someone gets offended because you want to learn from them. So be a learner. Band can start making their way back up here. I'd like to finish with a story about the power of loving the outcasts. In this case, a religious outcast. This is a story told by a man named Scott Larson in Relevant Magazine. And in this magazine, he's reflecting on the Samaritans and how they were religious outcasts. And he says, "So who would be the Samaritans for your church?" At a church I visited in Long Island, New York, it was the Wiccan community. There was scarcely a block in the quaint downtown area that didn't have a psychic reading stand or some sort of New Age shop. Obviously, these two groups, the church and the Wiccan community, did not intersect with each other. But the visit reminded me of a woman I met 4 years ago who had pastored a Wiccan church in our area and had attended a local clergy group asking to become a member. You can imagine the response she encountered. Though she was politely, or not, dismissed from the group, one brave pastor who decided not to dismiss her so quickly, and he ventured where few Christians dare and knocked on the door of the First Church of Wicca. Now, he had no idea who he was seeking. It turned out this woman was not just a local witch, in the technical sense, but was actually a high priestess in the movement. She had single-handedly gotten Wicca recognized as a bona fide religious group in jails and prisons across America. So she's one of those. Held two doctorate degrees and was part of launching a national television series called The Witch Next Door. One might surmise that this small-town pastor was in way over his head as he wandered into dangerous Samaritan territory. But he went. And he befriended this woman. He was even courageous enough to want to learn more about her and her faith. From some of my limited encounters with the dark side, I can't say I'd recommend such a thing, but it's good he didn't ask my advice. Over time, the two became friends, and the Wiccan pastor asked if she could attend the Christian pastor's church. Light is stronger than darkness, and in time, she became intrigued with what she saw. She read books he recommended, and she eventually became a Christian and decided to start a Christian church to reach her former followers. Those kinds of things happen when we venture into Samaria through the power of the gospel and allow outcasts into our churches. That's the power of love, people. That's what it can do. When we reach out with the love of Christ to the outcasts among us, only one thing can happen. The touch of Jesus can and will make anyone and everyone clean. So open your eyes, open your ears, and then act as God brings various kind of outcasts into your life. Let's stand and respond to the garden song.